This is Bayard Winthrop, founder of American Giant. We make all our clothing right here in the U.S. with American cotton and American workers. Get 20% off your first order when you use code GIANT20 at American-Giant.com.
Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is episode 160 of the show. This is a Baseball America podcast. I'm Carlos Clazo, joined by Ben Badler for another mailbag episode. What's up, Ben?
I'm good, Carlos. A lot of good draft questions coming today.
We did, yeah. We got some draft questions. We had a draft chat on the site last week. I'm hoping to do more of those throughout the year. Just seems like people at BA really love the draft year-round, which I appreciate. I take that to heart. I also love the draft year-round. So going to pull some draft questions that we had from there to expand on that I thought were interesting, and I kind of wanted to get your perspective because I've answered a couple of these just in brief text fashion, but you're as locked into the draft as I am, Ben, and we got some good ones. So let's hop right in. We have one from John who asks, who's your favorite college pitcher in the class? And if you had to take a guess, who's going to be the first college pitcher taken? I love this question because I feel like really the entire time we've been tracking these guys for the 2026 cycle since summer, really when we really started to bear down on names, this trio of Liam Peterson at Florida, Cameron Flueke at Coastal Carolina, and Jackson Flora at UC Santa Barbara have felt like the clear top tier of college arms at this stage. And I also have very little confidence in like who should be one, who should be two, who should be three. I think depending on who you talk to, you get different orders for those players, which is typical, I would say, this time of year. Like, we don't always have one clear and obvious standout pitching prospect. Even Paul Skeens, who became that pitcher at the end of his draft cycle in 2023, was not that. Maybe you could even say it was Chase Dollander, kind of in the SP1 tier of his own at the time. But I think there are three interesting names, and I've increasingly found myself liking one pitcher just throughout the offseason as I've watched more video, just dug more into the numbers, talked with scouts. Cameron Flueke is the arm of this group that I find myself liking just marginally above the other two. And I also think like so much of who's going to be one is just dependent on what they do this spring. Pitchers more than any other demographic of draft prospect can really change their profiles. We see it every single year. It wasn't that long ago where Hagen Smith and Chase Burns kind of in this like middle of the first round, where they're going to be territory, and they both had phenomenal years and jumped up the board. So
even last Tyler Bremner was the first college pitcher drafted. Right after him was Kate Anderson. We didn't have them that way coming into the
coming Liam Doyle, spring. Same thing. So
yeah, another good example. And he was what, the third college pitcher drafted, but obviously vaulted way, way up the list.
Yeah. So of these three, and maybe there's a player who's not in this three that you like better, Ben, who's your favorite college pitcher in the class right now?
I like Liam Peterson at Florida.
Okay.
The track record is strong. I like the frame. I like the breaking ball. I like the changeup. I like the control. I think he's been maybe not like dominant, but I think he will be that guy this mm-hmm. spring. If he comes out and he dominates in the SEC the way that I expect him to, between the size, the delivery, the control, the velocity, where he's sitting mid 90s, getting it up to 99. He's got a swing and miss slider. I like his changeup as well. Like, I think those are both big swing and miss pitches for him. Maybe mm-hmm. he tweaks some things with like the pitch usage or the way he attacks hitters, his approach. But I think the stuff and the other traits are there for him to be the first pitcher off the board. What about you?
Yeah, well, I'm curious. I wanted to ask you about Liam Peterson's control, because I agree with you pretty much everything you said. I'm also really curious to see this curveball that he's been working on in the offseason, like if he uses that pitch more frequently this spring, how that goes. I mean, he did improve his strike throwing from 2024 to 2025. He, as a freshman, had a 13.5% walk rate. And then in 2025, he had a 10.5% walk rate. That's a pretty notable jump in just strikes overall. That's maybe the one area of his game where I'm a little bit more, not concerned, but just hesitant compared to both Flueke and Jackson Flora. And I think for me, the reason why I've kind of become more of a fan of Cameron Flueke, is the command and just the qualities of his fastball. I think all three of these pitchers have really high caliber fastballs, but the more I dug into Cameron Flueke's and Flores, I think those are two of the very best fastballs in the class. And just Cameron Flueke's ability to throw that for strikes gives me a lot of confidence in just the foundation of his arsenal and not needing to worry about it or tweak it moving forward. I maybe even like some of the secondaries of Liam Peterson and Jackson Flora more than Cameron Flueke's, particularly in the breaking ball department. So like for Flueke in particular, that's one area that I'm curious to see, like how do his secondaries evolve? I think they're both really good right now for college, but just are we talking about a legit 60? Are we talking about solid average breaking balls? Are they 55s? Like just getting some more clarity on what those are going to be. But with Flueke more than Peterson and more than Flora, who Flora just hasn't pitched as long in a starting role as Flueke, I think that is maybe the separator for me. So yeah, if you just want to touch on like why you're, maybe it sounds like a little more confident in Peterson's strike throwing. Or pick up anything from what I said. Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm curious. So do you think that's who you would take, or do you think that's who would go first overall, or who will end up or be in the first college pitcher draft? Because then it's interesting to think about, okay, well, when will, which team will take the first college pitcher? Because I don't think the White Sox are doing it, even if it's not Ruk Chulowski for some reason. Like, I mean, I think it probably will be him, but still, it's not a guarantee at this point. No. I don't think they would take a college pitcher. The Rays pick second. I don't know. I don't see them taking a college pitcher. And then maybe the Twins do. I could see the Giants doing it. So I could see somebody outside of the top two picks, I guess, go in college pitcher and see how the whole year shakes out and who puts themselves where. But I don't know. I don't think we'll see a year like last year where it was like, all right, we have the Angels drafting second overall. which collegiate player, hitter or pitcher are they going to take?
Right. Yeah. It is interesting to think about where they're going to go. And for my Flueke comment, I would say like today I would take Flueke first. I also will just say like, I think all these guys are going to make material changes this spring. So I think it would be dumb to like lock myself into that. Like there's a reason we're going to watch them this year. We'll see what tweaks they make, who performs well. And maybe it's interesting to talk. Maybe it's just not at this point, but like Liam Peterson is the guy who's going to be facing SEC competition the entire year. And if like everything is equivalent for them throughout the year, I do think there are some teams that are going to factor in that competition maybe a little bit more than Flueke and Flora playing the competition they are. Maybe that's a little nitpicky, and maybe with pitchers you care about that less. I could see arguments on either side for that, but in terms of like where they're going to go, I think that's an interesting one too. I mean, proven college starters are a very prized demographic in the draft, but I think even more than that, teams want up the middle premium position players they feel confident about, and this draft is just so good at that demographic. It wouldn't shock me at all if like the pitchers got boxed out of the top five entirely. In 2025, we had Bremner go second. In 2024, we had Chase Burns go second. In 23, Paul Skenes was the first overall pick. In 2022, we had Kumar Rocker third, that surprising pick from the Rangers. In 2021, we had Jack Leiter and Jackson Jobe, 2 and 3. In 2020, Max Meyer, 3. Let's keep going.
Although Kumar Rocker wouldn't have been a college pitcher at that point, right?
Yeah, I guess fair. He would have been an indie pitcher.
Trusting this indie ball guy.
In my mind, same sort of profile. 2019 is the last draft we've had where we didn't have a pitcher in the top five, not even the top six. That was the Adley Rutschman, Bobby Witt, Andrew Vaughn, J.J. Bladé, Riley Green, C.J. Abrams draft. Pretty good one. I think really the 2026 class could look like that. It wouldn't shock me if we were on draft day and the board is Ruk Chulowski, Grady Emerson, Justin LeBron, Jacob Lombard, Drew Burris. Like, would that surprise you? Wouldn't surprise me.
No, I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is just like, we'll see how they play, which is maybe a boring answer. I feel confident we're going to have multiple pitchers in the top 10. I maybe wouldn't be shocked if we didn't have any pitchers in the top five, though.
There's good high school arms, too. I don't know if anybody jumps into the top 10, although.
Yeah. It wouldn't shock me. I mean, the Pirates just took Seth.
The Orioles
Hernandez
are not
there.
Taking them, but I know
the
that.
Pirates are up there. They could do it for us again. Let's
Pirates,
see who are other teams picking
Royals,
there.
Royals, Braves. I don't think the Rockies are doing that, but
man, Braves fans would lose their mind if picking ninth overall, they went back to the pitcher well after their shortstop draft from a year ago. Yeah, I think your targets are, though, are Braves, Royals, Pirates, top 10, if you want to see that happen. Those are the teams to circle in on. Okay, fun question. Let's get to another one. This is from an anonymous questioner. Is the concern with Jacob Lombard's hit tool justified to slide him out of the top 10? Would simply showing improved contact rate this spring lock him in the top 10 for you, or the top 5 for you, excuse me? I was curious to get your thoughts on this Jacob Lombard question, because I think, and we had another question in the chat too, that was just about like who are players who could surpass Rock Chulowski for 1-1. And I just think that Jacob Lombard's pure tools and upside are among the most exciting in the class. It's like him and Justin LeBron on the college side are the two guys for me whose athleticism and tool set and pure upside is just tremendously exciting for me. We've gotten very little feedback at all from the scouting industry to warrant sliding Jacob Lombard out of the top 10. We've gotten feedback to the point of like people would be shocked if Jacob Lombard did not go inside the top 10. And I think that it is because those tools are just so loud and he is such a sure thing at shortstop, and all of the baseball instincts and actions and the swing, the body, the bloodlines that he has, like, are just enough to give people confidence that he's going to figure it out. I would say I'm like personally a little more worried about the miss rate than the industry seems to be, Ben, just because the frequency that he swung and missed at the high school level is concerning to me. But I also pulled up, like, his, prior to this podcast, like I pulled up everything we have for him on Synergy from 2024, 2025. He has a ton of games played there, a ton of data to look through. And it kind of surprised me because his average fastball velocity faced is higher than some small school college hitters, which I think just points to the quality of the composition high school players can face. And so I'm kind of torn on like how pessimistic or skeptical or worried I should be about this, because it's so easy just to point to guys like Elijah Green, and we'll see what happens with Ethan Holiday next year, but like his debut, not encouraging for players with a ton of swing and miss. So where are you at in terms of your concern or lack thereof with Jacob Lombard's contact skills?
I think he's going to be he's not in the 2025 draft, so he's going to be competing against a different set of players to go in the top 5 or top 10 overall picks. But like you mentioned Ethan Holiday, and we talked about for years, had swing and miss as one of his bigger concerns coming out of high school, for as much as I liked him and as talented as he is. And he went 4th overall, right?
So, and got the biggest bonus in the draft.
And I don't know that there's anything that Ethan Holiday does better than Jacob Lombard, maybe including even power. I mean, Jacob Lombard has a lot of bat speed and pretty significant power. I mean, if you want to argue Holiday for raw power, fine, but that's not anything that Jacob Lombard is lacking. And right, he's a plus-plus runner. He has a great arm. He has tremendous instincts and actions and a nose for the ball and an internal clock and everything you want to see at shortstop. I mean, it's him and Aiden Ruiz for the best defensive shortstops in the country. There, he does, and I probably would take Ruiz, but Lombard has a better arm than him. So I think Jacob Lombard can be a plus or better defensive shortstop. All the actions look right at shortstop. All the tools are there, and then he has plenty of bat speed, raw power.
And the swing looks great.
Yeah, the swing is good. Like, it's a short, balanced swing. I think he can get too steep sometimes and get uphill. And
sometimes I think his foot is just down late. But I'm not really trying to diagnose mechanical issues. But
so yeah, I mean, look, like his brother is another guy. Like his brother George Lombard Jr., who's the number one prospect in the Yankees farm system, is also really good. I think Jacob Lombard is even more athletic, louder tools than his brother. I think he's a better prospect at the same age, and I liked his brother a lot when he was a prospect coming out of high school too. But his older brother too, is there's swing and miss there also, with some concerns about that. So I think you just look at the tools, the athleticism, the defense at a premium position, and the operation at the plate, I think that still puts him somewhere within the top 10 overall picks. Now, it is still, it is a stronger draft, I think, in 26 compared to 25. But I think he still has a good chance to go in the top 10 and maybe top five, maybe even right behind Rochelowski at number two. I mean, the Rays are picking number two. They certainly have, they certainly value shortstop defense and seem okay with some guys who swing and miss some, especially at that position.
Yeah.
So I could see him going as high as number two. I mean, maybe number one if something, you know, crazy happens with Rock, but that's the kind of talent that that he has. And I don't know that he's going to really answer any questions on like the contact rate this year unless it's something extreme, because he's going to be facing, you know, it's a good area for high school baseball.
He's in Florida,
players, so. Yeah, in Florida and Miami area relative to the rest of the country. But I don't know that you're going to like totally see that answered this spring.
Yeah. Just looking at the teams picking in the top 10 too, like, I mean, it's very, it would be hard. We'll see what happens this year, but a team like the Royals picking at six, like that is a profile that I feel like would be very hard on a team like that who values athletes and tools to pass on, even with the swing and miss concerns. Like, we'll see if the Rockies have some shift in philosophy or approach, but like traditionally a team like the Rockies, are they passing on a guy? They just took Ethan Holliday and paid him the most money in the world.
I think it would be very different approach this year.
Right. I'll be very curious to see how that one changes. But like Giants, also another team I would expect to be, I mean, all these teams I would expect to be scouting him very heavily at the very top, because you never know what's going to happen. But when you were talking about taking Lombard over Ethan Holliday from last year's class, I'm curious how many players right now do you think would have gone first overall from this year's group if they were eligible in last year's draft? Because I think there's at least three. I'd probably say four, and I think maybe you could say five or six if you wanted.
Just on the
Rock
high school?
Rochelowski goes. No, overall. Okay. I think Rochelowski, obviously.
Yeah.
I think he would go first overall. I think Grady Emerson, we would take him over any of the high school players last year. I think Lombard, for all the reasons we just talked about. I think Justin LeBron is probably going ahead of any of the high school hitters, going ahead of Ivar Arquette. And then we get into this range of like players who I'm not sure. So I think conservatively, I would take all four of the top shortstops in this year's class, high school and college, first overall over anyone last year, probably.
I like Tyler Spangler more than Eli Willits when they were in high school. So I think you can argue certainly Willits going ahead. But I think there's much bigger power upside with Tyler Spangler. I like his bat to ball. I like his left-handed swing.
Frame.
I think they both can play shortstop. And they are obviously the same age. So.
Okay. All right. Well, good question on Lombard. He's a fascinating player. Imagine he'll be a polarizing player within the context of like the tier that he's in. Another one we have here that I thought would be a good one to talk with you, Ben, is someone asked, this is another anonymous one, as the new collective bargaining agreement is looming, what changes would you make to the draft? I basically said in my answer to this, I think pick trading and hard slotting would be good changes. I think hard slotting, if only because it's going to add some more accessibility to the draft itself. I really feel like you have to put in a lot of time to figure out the like details of how baseball's slotting system works. And it would maybe just be a little easier to understand. And then I also think, too, I like the fact that the soft slotting system gives teams and players some creativity, some control, just some ability to attack the draft in a unique way. And so I think if you had hard slotting and pick trading, you kind of get that creativity. Like if you evaluate a class differently than someone else, you're not locking yourself into picking at this spot for you have to pay this amount of money. So I think it would be smart to allow pick trading. And I just think pick trading in general, people like to see. It makes the draft more exciting. I think if teams really feel like they've got an advantage, they feel like they can evaluate or scout players better than another team, they want to invest more in the draft. I like giving teams just the ability to do that. Although admittedly, every time I mention this, it would make my life personally a lot worse for mock drafting season.
That's why I like it too. Yeah.
Yeah. Ben wants to punish me. And like, this one is not very realistic, but I, I would really have liked to have been able to cover the draft prior to a bonus pool system existing at all. I imagine it was a lot more fun, but that just seems so unrealistic at this point that I feel like it's not worth too much of a mention. But I guess if the question is, you can do whatever you want to the draft, what do you have?
I definitely would go for pick trading. I think teams should be able to trade picks. I like teams having more freedom to do what they want with the assets that they're given. So if you want to acquire a whole bunch of draft picks, or you want to trade away a bunch of draft picks, great. I think it's also, it makes just trades easier to execute too, because when you're trying to find a fit, when you're trading for, you know, some left-handed reliever or whoever in a trade, hey, maybe we don't agree on the value of this prospect or that prospect, or we think this farm system stinks. And
fine, picks have steady, stable, universal value.
Yeah, we'll take your second round pick, or we'll take your third round pick, and we'll just draft the guy that we like with that pick. So we don't have to worry about finding an alignment there.
It's so weird that the current system allows you to trade just supplemental picks. I don't understand why that's the case, but I guess we get a little taste of it. So.
Yeah, I don't understand the argument against trading picks. Let teams make
the argument is Carlos Collazo's mock drafting is difficult. That's the only one that has any weight really been. Come on.
If the idea is like, well, we don't want, as MLB, one team to like shoot themselves in the foot and like trade away a bunch of draft picks and then mortgage their future that way. I don't know. Like, I'm not extremely sympathetic to that argument. I think if you want to make bad decisions, then you can make bad decisions and then you pay the consequences for it. But if MLB wanted to put in some sort of guardrail system where, say, you know, maybe you can only trade picks within this, you know, top three rounds or four rounds, or you can't trade picks beyond the current year or current 2 years, or you can't trade more than X number of draft picks in a given draft. All right, fine. Maybe as like an introduction, we can do that. Okay, fine, do that. But if, I don't know, if a team wants to trade up to get the number five pick in the draft this year from the Pirates or whatever, like, I don't know, why shouldn't they be able to do that? Maybe the Pirates don't want a draft, don't like the options that are there. Maybe the best guy on the board is some high school player. Maybe the high school player is really good, but, you know, they're thinking, hey, high school players going to be far away. Might all.
Or even if it was this year where, like, there's a clear top player, just imagine, like, what the bidding war could potentially be.
You could get something to help. Yeah, you could get a player in AAA who's a prospect, right? And who's, like, you know, top 50 prospect. We're just like, hey, we can get this guy now, or somebody who's closer to, you know, maybe already in the big leagues who can help you. So. I think teams should be able to make their own decisions on that and have more. I'm generally pro freedom, so I want to see teams have more freedom to be able to make the decisions that they think are in the best interest of their organization. And then the second one is tricky, but you got to one of the things that I think has benefited the international signing process in terms of the attention on it is that it used to be on July 2nd, right? And when players are signing on July 2nd, there's major league games going on. There are minor league games going. There's just so many other things happening at once that it's hard for those players to get a lot of attention. Whereas if it happens now on January 15th, whether you want to hear about them or not, like, that's pretty much the only thing on the baseball calendar happening that day. Like, it's kind of near the Hall of Fame announcement. There's like, you know, salary arbitration Twitter is going nuts a few days before, but like, I guess Kyle Tucker signed at like, thankfully, like 10 o'clock that night. Thank you, Kyle Tucker, for not doing that at like, you know, 11 a.m. or something and taking over the news cycle that day. But that's a lot of those players get a lot of attention, or a lot more attention, because it happens when there's nothing else going on the baseball calendar. It's obviously really hard to do that, given the timing with colleges, college baseball. Not that I think MLB needs to or should cater to the college baseball schedule. In fact, like, I think if they wanted to push it into the offseason, it'd be like super disruptive to college baseball. I think they should be open to that. But there is a window where, you know, And I know everybody who works in baseball listening to this hates, you know, minus like one guy in New York, but like hates the draft being in July, mid-July now, mm-hmm. instead of being when it used to be in early June. But if you're going to keep it in July, I would just push it back a few more days until the day after the All-Star break. And I realized too, like, you know, people like the All-Star game, people in baseball I'm talking about, and want to pay attention to that and all that. But like, just push it back. It's fine if you have to miss an All-Star game if you work in baseball. Just push it back a little bit to where there's nothing on the calendar competing with the draft, mm-hmm. and have the draft be that start that day. So there's nothing else competing with it. Because when there's major league games going on at the same time, it's hard to get the same amount of attention for the draft compared to, like, you know, the way the NBA or the NFL does it. And I don't think it's ever going to be at that level, because those guys are going straight to the, you know, their top professional league in those sports. But I think the more you can do to separate it from other games being played mm-hmm. at the same time, especially when there is that downtime in the calendar that day. So I know a lot of people who work in baseball maybe don't want to hear that, but it, from a fan experience, I think it would be superior to just give it its own day.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I don't have super strong takes on like the scheduling, but I do think currently there's just a lot going on when the draft happens. And as someone who covers the draft, probably biased, but I definitely think that like giving the draft its own day makes a lot of sense. It should be a big event that the people are focused on, and not having to worry about watching your team or watching games, and also keeping kind of track of the draft. That feels like a kind of a no-brainer to me. But yeah, I don't know if I have too much. The only other things I would add is like things I would not do. Like I really hate constantly hearing about more concerns over the draft getting even smaller, and like the rumors about what if high school players are not going to be eligible for future drafts. I just think that would be such an own goal for baseball if they did that. Like, I have no idea what the logic is of making your draft follow like the NFL model, for example, where you don't draft anyone out of high school, or even the NBA model. You go to college, you have one and dones. Like, again, I do not think baseball should be making these decisions based on college baseball, like the health of the sport of college baseball. But I think for both the idea that like one and dones in college baseball doesn't sound appealing to me, I also just think there are so many high school players who very clearly do not need to be going to college. A lot of players have no interest in going to college and want to start their pro careers. I think it would be such a, it's like antithetical to getting talent into pro baseball to remove the high school player pool from the draft. One of my quote unquote changes would be just not implementing that. Like, do we really need Bobby Wood Jr. to go to Oklahoma and play baseball? No. Do we need Connor Griffin to go to college? Clearly not.
Jay Johnson disagrees with you, by the way.
Yeah, well, I'm sure all the college coaches are pounding the table to make this change. They'd absolutely love it. Yeah, it'd be great for college baseball if high school players were not eligible for the draft. But unfortunately or fortunately for us, like, college baseball is not in charge of determining the eligibility for Major League Baseball's draft. And I just think, like, if you want to go and focus on baseball and have that be your full-time job and have all of your everything that you're doing on the field is focused on getting better as a baseball player, the current model works pretty well. I think there are a lot of paths for players. If they want to go to college, there's the JUCO route, which increasingly doesn't get talked about, but I still think is a really good route for a lot of players. You can go to college for 1 year from that route, go back into the draft. You can go straight to the draft. You can go to a four-year school, go there for a few years. Like, I just feel like the current draft model for baseball gives a lot of flexibility to players and to teams, and I like that about it. I think there is this like tendency to try and copy and paste things from other leagues onto baseball, and I don't know why there's the tendency to do that. I don't think like making some of those changes is just going to guarantee that you're getting more interest in your draft now. Like, people are either interested in baseball's draft or they're not. And changing some of the logistics or the eligibility requirements is not going to get you the popularity of NFL draft day. That's fine.
I can tell you why MLB would want fewer high school players going in the
cheaper.
Draft. It's way cheaper.
It's cheaper for them.
Yeah. You can devote way fewer resources to having to scour the country for high school players.
Yeah, I understand their logic. I just push back on it entirely. I think it is bad for the game. And to your point earlier, where you're talking about freedom, like if there are owners and teams who want to offload all their player development to college baseball, fine, do that. I think other teams who actually value getting players into their own system and developing them on their own and want to spend the resources and the time to get players and to get advantages on players and to get them in their system early should just be able to do that. And I don't like the idea of just blocking that avenue of entry point. Like, yeah, I get it. All the owners want to cut costs wherever they can, but I think it would be bad for the game.
That's what everything is in terms of when they're trying to cut the number of rounds in the draft. And I don't even think, like, going from 40 to 20 rounds, I don't think it's even that big of a deal to me. Like, yeah, you still sign other guys as NDFAs. Now you do have more roster restrictions. I think those are obviously a bigger deal. Cutting the short season league teams, that's a bigger deal. If they were to cut, you know, there's talk of cutting DSL roster spaces and saying, hey, some teams have two DSL teams and some only want to go with one. What if we just said everyone can only have one team? Yeah, I think that would be hugely detrimental to baseball, especially because, look, like from MLB's perspective, they're saying, all right, we'll just have these. If we, you know, either find a way to implement a system where we're not drafting high school players or we're drafting fewer high school players, those players are they're not like leaving baseball, right? For the most part, maybe there's like an exception here and there if there's like, you know, an exceptional football player. But that, if you're an exceptional football player, you're probably going to play, you know, football in college anyway, right? So those guys are still going to be in baseball, and you'll just make decisions on them later when you have more information and more performance data, more time to make those decisions on those players. Incidentally, it also will likely push them until hitting free agency later, because you can't get to the big leagues when you're, you know, 20 years old, if you're Jackson Holiday or whoever, which is a reason why, if you're the Players Association, you should absolutely push back against it. And I said this last time, or maybe even two CBA negotiations ago, when MLB was talking about raising the signing age for international players. And I was like, look, whatever you think about this idea, good, bad for like the players or the game itself, if you're the Players Association, your position should absolutely be against raising the signing age. Because if you raise the signing age to 18, but it's not even like, there's no signing age in the United States to be that you have to sign at 18 either. Like, it's plenty of 17-year-olds who are getting drafted. So if you raise it to 18 and then players are debuting at 18 instead of 17, they're just going to, there's less chance you're going to get a Jackson Churio getting to the big leagues.
Juan Soto.
Yeah. 20, yeah, certainly like a Juan Soto is not getting there that fast, or like a Vladdy Jr. Like, those guys will still move fast, but they're going to reach, and not just those guys, but everybody's going to reach free agency and reach salary arbitration at a later age. And that's going to push everything back. And that's going to have a downstream effect on salaries for all players. So whatever you think about what's best for baseball, the position of the MLB Players Association should absolutely be against raising the signing age. Now, you know, they get a nicer meal on the bus or the whatever. Like, I don't know. Maybe they'll give in, but if they're thinking long term, they should be against that. Both on the draft and the
agreed.
The international.
Agreed entirely. And even setting aside the cost conversation, which drives all of this, like, do we really want to live in a world where we're getting fewer years of young stars in Major League Baseball? The whole point is to get the best players we can into the sport and watch them for as long as we can. If we're pushing off, like, why would Major League Baseball want to have fewer years of Paul Skeens or Bobby Witt Jr. or Connor Griffin or Bryce Harper? Like, you want those guys in your sport playing games. Like, that's what drives the attention and the excitement. The players are the entire thing. And just having them but having every player be forced to go play 1, 2, 3 years in college, it makes the sport worse. I don't see any other way to say it other than it's worse. Like, you're getting fewer talented players into the league for for as many years as you possibly can. I think it's just stupid.
I've had this idea and kind of thought for the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years that, and there've been multiple times on the podcast where I've thought about bringing it up, but I didn't want to, cause I just didn't want to give anybody at MLB who listens any ideas, but it, I don't know. They're all pretty smart people who obviously have seem to have come to a similar idea themselves that, yeah, they clearly want to shrink the number of high school players who are signing. And that I thought there could come a day where MLB says, yeah, why are we drafting high school players? Then where the owners say, why are we spending all of these resources scouting high school players all around the country, having our scouts drive around to all of these high school games, spending all this money, evaluating these players, gathering all this information on this deep group of high school players, when we could either just say, no, make everybody go to college like the NBA or the NFL or other sports do. Or they could just also say, I could see something where they say, you can draft high school players, but you have to draft them within the first round or the first two rounds or the first, 50 picks, whatever it is. Because if you do that, you're still going to be saving a lot. You're still drafting Connor Griffin, right? You're still drafting Bobby Witt Jr. You're still drafting those players.
Oh, what?
But you're saving a lot of money because you're not having to go out and scout, the Zaire Hope or the Nate George in the
18th. The savings you're talking about are the operational savings. All the teams are spending their full bonus pools regardless of the demographic of players.
Yeah, but all the money that you're paying.
If you're cutting scouts, you have to go watch those games.
That's
you're
100%
cutting down travel costs.
I'm talking about
cutting down.
Yeah, the mindset of the owners where they're saying, okay, we could do this differently and we can save more money on our, on our operational costs that way. Just explaining to the owners. I hope it doesn't happen. I hope it doesn't happen because I think it's great to have high school players in the draft. It's great to have more high school players coming up through the minor league system. But I think also you can see everything they're doing, cutting minor league teams, even the way they schedule the rookie ball season, right? Like why is the Arizona Complex League and why does the Florida Complex League season start before the draft and then end before the draft is here? It should be, if you want high school players there, it should be for high school players in addition to your international players who are coming over, but they do the exact opposite because I don't think they want the high school players in that league.
Man. Okay. Well, on this depressing note, I'm entirely in agreement with you, Ben. Ben Badler for MLB commissioner. Let's make it happen.
Yeah. To be clear, that's not my position that I want to happen, but I'm trying to explain, I think, the thought process of the 30 people who actually
own the team. Do you think it's all 30? I have to hope it's not all 30. Well, I mean, I think it's clearly not all 30, but majority.
I don't think it's the GMs.
It's not the front office.
Yeah, they've.
They're not the ones setting the budgets, spending the money's not coming out of their accounts. So,
yeah, it's the owners who want to save a few bucks.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've covered that one pretty thoroughly. Let us know if you guys have any ideas for the draft, things you'd like to see. Always curious to hear what you guys are thinking. But that's it for today's mailbag episode. We'll continue to roll these out throughout the year. Been fun to do. Thanks again for listening to the show, supporting. If you guys want to leave us a rating or review, that'll definitely help the podcast out. So we really appreciate if you take the time to do that as well. I guess with that, he's Ben. I'm Carlos. See you next time, everybody. So long.